a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good morning. The very brief meeting of the Senate Health and Human Service Committee is called to order. For those of you who are listening on the internet, it's a beautiful, warm day in Pierre, 3 below 0. But we're all here for a very brief section of this most august committee. I'll remind everyone to turn off their cell phones over here and set the example myself if it'll just go off. Good. The secretary will call the roll.
Dempster.
Here.
Gant.
Here.
Gerstad.
Here.
Merchant.
Here.
Miles.
Here.
Hansen.
Here.
Adelstein.
Here. We have a quorum. Would someone please move the minutes? Sure.
Second.
Are there any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The minutes pass. Anyone who's testifying today, be sure and remember to sign in so that we know your names and where to find you. No, we know your names. We will now have take under consideration House Bill 1275 to extend the state limit for cochlear implants. Would you hear from proponents? Well, good morning, Representative.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Health Committee. Mr. Chairman, you said it was a warm day in Pierre, and I think you meant that kind of negatively, but it is a warm day in Pierre compared to Aberdeen. It's 21 below in Aberdeen this morning.
21 below.
So,
and I won't tell you that it's about 45 in Rapid City.
Well, probably not quite, but Mr. Chairman, we all know that as we go across our state, we can see quite a variance. The only thing they did say, it would probably be warmer in Aberdeen tomorrow morning than Sioux Falls because of the way the front's moving through. Mr. Chairman and committee members, good morning again. Paul Dennett, State Rep, District 2. I was informed by a lobbyist as I was looking at the calendar this morning, and I knew I had to meet with you today, but I went over and double-checked the room number, and as I was standing there, a lobbyist came by, and I says, boy, I said, I'm the only bill in Senate Health today, and he said, you know, when that happens, they ask a lot of questions because you'll have to earn your money today. But I don't know that there's a lot of questions to ask. It's a pretty simple little bill. You know, I'm not going to go back with a lot of detail on the cochlear implant program, and I got some general dates in mind, but I think I could stand to be corrected on them. But I'm going to say 5-6 years ago, ladies and gentlemen, as I sat in Appropriations Committee and when we heard testimony with the Board of Regents in our school for the deaf, the superintendent at that time was talking about cochlear implants and how the child was adapting to one and how much cheaper their education would be in the long run and how much money the state could save. And so I talked to him quite extensively and looked forward and came up with the thought that if there's a child out there that could not get a cochlear implant due to financial reasons, the family and or their insurance company not paying for it, the state probably would be well suited to step in the end and help pay for that cochlear implant and really in the long run save money. So we went forward with it and actually set up an appropriation out of the telecommunications fund, a continuous appropriation of up to $200,000 a year to help families pay for cochlear implants. As I remember, the bill passed, I think, both chambers, and I think there was only one lone no vote on the legislation as it went through. The interesting thing is, and I think it's a very good thing, is there's been a lot of cochlear implants in the last 5-6 years, but the state hasn't expended any money. I think it's been $10,000 max, and that wasn't really for the implant. I guess maybe the department will tell you what they spent it on. That's good news. Kids or children are getting cochlear implants. The insurance is picking them up, and evidently the family's a means of taking care of a lot of the costs, which is good. The interesting thing is we went down the road a couple of years, and we was going to provide for one cochlear implant. Well, technology got better, and the industry got better, and said, hey, one is great, two is better. So a couple of years ago, we expanded the legislation to say one or two if the first one was done before the age of five. But then we also said in the legislation that's currently that it also would provide for an implant if they had progressive hearing loss at an older age, up to the age of 21. Well, my head always starts spinning or something, and let's just say 5 years ago that a child was six at that time, didn't have a cochlear implant, and they were deaf then. So I got to thinking, maybe we should see if a child fell through the cracks. You know, they were too old to get it, to help, you know. And I went to my writers, and we just talked about it a little bit, and I was going to say, well, should we pick the age of 15 or 16 or something? And they said it'd be a lot easier just to look at the bill or the statute that's in place that we provided up to the age of 21 and just go ahead and use that same language. So the bill that you see before you just crosses out 5 and puts 21 and crosses out the first implant. You know, it just protects everybody then, I guess, or the children. And so that's the purpose of the legislation, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know if anybody fell through the cracks. I think the department might have some more comments on that. But if we could help one child, if there's one child out there that wants to get a cochlear implant at a higher age, and they're adapted to it, you know, the industry knows if it'll help or might work or might not. The only instance I can tell you of a cochlear implant at an older age was Miss America a few years ago. Was a deaf gal. She got married, I'm sure, after Miss America, had a baby, and she said, I want a cochlear implant so I could hear my baby cry. I think she had one, was successful. The only other thing I've heard since then in my testimony is that she also wears a hearing aid. So she's got a single implant, evidently, but uses a hearing aid. But I'm going to go back to my original thought. If we missed a child that's, you know, or under the age of 21, that this could help them or their family, and that's the purpose of the legislation. And I'd stand by for questions. Thank you, and I'd like you to pass the bill.
Thank you very much. I remember with great pleasure serving with you on that Appropriations Committee. You were always very thoughtful, and I remember the very discussion that we had. Thank you.
Yep. You're welcome.
Are there other proponents of House Bill 1275?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Dan Lusk, Deputy Secretary for the Department of Human Services. The Department of Human Services has worked very closely with Representative Dennert over the last 5 years implementing the cochlear implant program, and we are supportive of the expansion of the program to age 21. As indicated, many private insurance companies and Medicaid do cover the cost of cochlear implants, and what we have learned from the implementation of the program is that there are very few children that are falling through the cracks, and the costs that we are able to pick up through this program have been the costs of the co-shares or cost or co-pays for the individuals that are getting cochlear implants based upon the enacting legislation of the program. So there have been very few individuals that have wanted to get a cochlear implant that haven't been able to find the appropriate coverage within their current insurance plan or Medicaid. And with that briefly being said, I'm just here to say that the department is in support of the expansion to age 21 and would stand by for any questions.
Thank you very much. Are there further proponents for House Bill 1275?
Morning,
Good morning.
Senators. I'm not sure if I'm a proponent or opponent. I'm kind of neutral. I'm Dr. Paul Amundson. I'm a physician from Sioux Falls. I'm an unpaid lobbyist this week for the State Medical Association, but I also wear a hat of medical director for Dakota Care Insurance Company that covers probably 80,000 lives in the state of South Dakota. One of my main tasks is to implement medical coverage policies such as for cochlear implants. And I did not get a chance to do much research on cochlear implants prior to this bill, but I can tell you from my history with DakotaCare, certainly we have never had any restrictions on cochlear implants from an age standpoint. But the one concern that I did have that was mentioned with the first proponent has to do with bilateral cochlear implants. The research on bilateral cochlear implants is still early. There's not good, firm, peer-reviewed evidence that a bilateral cochlear implant is going to really improve things. Now, you always think that, well, two ears, two eyes, you know, proprioception, depth perception is affected. And when you do a cochlear implant, you're stimulating the eighth cochlear nerve. So it's literally a nerve stimulator into the eighth nerve at the base of the brain. And it works much different than hearing aids. But the fact to do two of them, I just want the committee to know that, you know, it's still early in that, and we do cover them, but at least for DakotaCare, I can talk about it's covered, but it's certainly done on an individual basis, so I don't want to give the committee the assumption that medical state of the art is everybody gets two, because the vast majority of the people get one. With children, especially younger children, it's very common to do two, but not at the same time. You want to make sure that it's working properly before you submit the child to a separate procedure. So I'm certainly available for questions if you have any. I'm certainly not going to profess to be an expert on cochlear implants, but I can at least give you a insurance company medical director perspective on this technology.
Thank you very much, Doctor. Are there any further proponents?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would like to be a proponent if I could stay here.
Oh, by all means.
Not for you.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I was coaching softball at Augustana College several years ago, I had a student from Rapid City, Amanda, who came, and she was a walk-on to our program. Fabulous person, and she was deaf. And if all of you can just imagine what it would be like to be on a softball team and be deaf. So much of what happens is auditory. You know, we're always giving directions, not just the coaches, but, you know, if there's a ball to the outfield and she was an outfielder, the infielders are immediately telling her where to throw it, you know, here, 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 and so on. And, you know, when she's on base, whether or not to continue from second to third, and all the things that happen. I mean, it's a big obstacle not to be able to hear and be on a softball team or probably any team. But she did remarkably well. She could read lips, and she got along great with the team and was a good student and all. But towards the end of that year, she was so ecstatic because she was approved for getting a cochlear implant. And it made a huge, huge difference in her life. So I just offer up that story. You know, I think these things, they never work perfectly. And every body is different. And how a body accepts something like that, everybody's different. So, you know, probably not a miracle in every life. But, you know, what an opportunity. And I hadn't heard the Miss America story, but that's a pretty neat one, too. So I think if we can help these children, we should do every effort and everything that we can.
Thank you very much, Senator Durstedt. Are there further proponents for House Bill 1275? Seeing none, we'll close it to proponent testimony. Are there any opponents to House Bill 1275? Are there any opponents? Seeing none, we'll close it to testimony and we'll move to... very, very good. Thank you, Senator.
Oh, I just...
You know, with no opponents, I probably do not need a rebuttal time. The only opportunity, reason I asked to speak, is the doctor that came up and testified, and he was neutral. And I think he justifiably said that the second implant isn't always the way to go. And I think the Miss America story is a true story of that. She had one, but she also had a hearing aid. Because if you go cochlear, then you don't have the ability to go back and revive any hearing that you might have had, is the way I understand it. And that's why I really appreciate an expert coming in and saying that. That's the Miss America, and I just wanted to inform you that when I said two sometimes is better, a couple of years ago when the family came in with the little girl that had one, and I'm going to say a year or two, Mr. Lust, I think she had her second, and when we tried, was going to pass the law to extend it to provide for two, this family came in, and this young lady testified in committee, and her mother said how it improved, the second one improved. So I think he was right on in saying at a young age it's better, but at an older age, probably in the case of Miss America, they kept the hearing aid for the one ear and the cochlear implant for the other. But thank you, and thank you for your consideration and latitude of my speaking again.
Thank you.
We'll then close the testimony to... the committee to testimony, and we'll move to questions from the committee. And I'm going to ask the first one to you, Representative Dennard, please. Maybe the only exercise we get today.
That's good for
me. Representative, how much money, I'm intrigued, and also it affects, how much money has accumulated then in the fund that we started all those years ago in our youth?
Mr. Chairman, the way I understand it, it's continually appropriated, $200,000 up to $200,000. So if we had a big run, they could only expend $200,000. But if none, there's no request, the money just stays in that telecommunications fund.
So it doesn't build up.
So it does not build up.
Thank you. Another question to any of the members of the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Miles, I saw first.
Uh-huh. Oh, I would defer, certainly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Dempster. quick question. What is the cost of a cochlear implant?
You know, I was afraid that question would come up, Senator Miles. You know, I think it depends a lot on the child. You know, and I wouldn't have a clue. Maybe the department would have a clue. But I think they could, you know, I'll just pass. I really don't know. I think maybe there's somebody that could answer it.
Dr. Amundson, I saw nodding his head that he knew.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, in my position, I have to be a healthcare economist as well and look at charges and trying to, as I'm sure Senator Dempster knows, trying to evaluate charges as like herding cats. I would say a general idea on build charge for the total cost of a cochlear implant is probably, and understand in general, these are typically outpatient procedures. For a very young child, if it's an overnight stay, you might have several more $1,000s because of hospital charges. But, you know, I'm thinking ballpark probably $10,000 to $15,000 of build charges for a procedure. And that includes the, you know, typically the facility fee, physician fee, anesthesiologist fee, and the unit itself. So you got to take all those components and try to bundle them together, and you know that's probably the best closest guess I could give you off the top of my head.
Senator Dempster,
just a quick question to any of the proponents. I think I know, but I want to know that I know. Help me understand the funding stream. Help me understand where the money comes from. Help me understand any potential costs.
Well, I'll stand to be corrected. I know the department, Mr. Lusk, and sure sent. The fund is accumulated through the 15-cent surcharge in all the phone lines every month, and that is collected, goes into what they call a telecommunications fund or something like that, and that fund then grows, and they expend out of that fund for other things also, services for the deaf. The fund accumulates, and by the way, for your information, I think there was a bill that was in the House yesterday that was pulling $500,000 out of that fund to fund the science lab. There would have been money left to cover this, I mean, up to $200,000, because that's a continuous income. But the money really basically all comes from that surcharge at 15 cents per phone line per month.
And what would you expect the impact of this bill to be on that fund?
Well, if nobody applies or nobody's there, it won't have any effect on it. That fund will just stay there, and it'll accumulate to grow.
But then there wouldn't be a reason for the bill.
Well, we got to have the bill so it's passed. So if anybody wants to have the implant, so they can draw out of the fund to provide for the.
So, Mr. Chair, so help me understand the financial impact.
Well, as the doctor said, if a family came in, if 10 families came in, the impact could be, close to $150,000 or $200,000 in a year if it happened. I would assume that.
And would you think that would be likely?
No. I think the department, they feel comfortable to expand this to this age because they do not feel there's going to be a huge run in a demand on the fund.
Further questions? Could you come forward? And I have to like to ask a department question of the department. How much has that total fund grown? How much is in the fund now?
Are you talking about the $200,000?
No. The 15 cent.
Fund?
Yes.
The balance in the fund is.
I'm sorry. Again, Dan Lusk with the Department of Human Services. The balance in the fund is approximately $1.4 million right now.
Thank you very much.
Any?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have a question for Mr. Lusk. As I understand it, and I please correct me if I'm wrong, the legislature in about 1999 set up this fund, which would be dedicated completely to the telecommunication transmission for the deaf, so that, for instance, if you would stop at one of our roadside help stations or bathrooms along the way in the highways, that there would be a telecommunications system there if you were deaf that you could access. And other signage, and I think there's new technology for telecommunication transmission for the deaf, and that this fund would be dedicated solely to that. But as I understand it, $2 million has already been transferred to the general fund in the last couple years, and again this year the governor is seeking to take another $500,000 for the mines from this fund. And as I understand it, your department has oversight and is supposed to, report to the legislature every year about the fund. Can you kind of help me out with understanding why this was allowed? And, I think there's a lot of expense going forward, and I'm worried that we're not going to have enough money. Can you help me out with that?
Certainly, if I may provide
Please.
Some comment. It was prior to 1999 when this was established. I believe it was about a decade before that. The fee is 15% or 15 cents on every telephone line, cell phone line, pager device. And that goes into the telecommunication fund for the deaf. 90% goes in there. 10% goes into another fund for people with other disabilities. The purpose of the fund is not to put devices in rest areas, that type of thing. The purpose of the fund was established to provide a telecommunication relay system for people who are deaf or hard of hearing. Meaning, if I'm deaf and I want to contact you, I can use the relay service, call in through that relay service, and there's a relay communication assistant that would help us with that communication system. That's the purpose of that. We've been meeting that need ever since this fund was established. As a matter of fact, since that time, within the last 2 years, we've also expanded that service to what's called CapTel. It's a captioned telephone where people who are severely hard of hearing can also use the regular telephone line, but they can also read the communication as it comes across. So we've also expanded the service. We continually work with communication services for the deaf in Sioux Falls to find other appropriate ways of utilizing the fund source. Some of the things that you talk about are really kind of outside the scope of what we're intended on using the fund for, like a system at a interstate rest area, one of the things that they presented to us was a video phone. They're very expensive. They're also, the ongoing maintenance and service that goes along with that is also very expensive. And so we have to determine what's the best use for that fund in terms of the ongoing costs that you would incur in such types of services. And we've also had to keep our eye, our department's been very conservative in this area because the federal FCC has been looking at the potential of passing additional costs in this area down to the state. That's been one of the reasons that we've taken a conservative approach, because the FCC was looking at passing on the cost of video relay services, which costs upwards of $6 per minute to administer, as well as the cost of internet protocol. They haven't been able to do that because the state is responsible for paying for intra-state communications. That would be within the state of South Dakota. The federal government, through the NECA fund or the federal surcharge on your telephone, pays for all interstate communications. If those costs are passed down to the state, it will be a very significant cost to the state. That's why we've taken a conservative approach with this fund. I think it was the right thing to do. And the federal government has taken the next step in that process. They've determined a way to establish a 10-digit number on your internet communication connections. So now they are able to determine where a communication starts and where it ends, and those video relay services and internet protocol services use that high-speed internet connection. So we continue to monitor what's happening on the federal level as it may impact this as well. So that's some of the history with the fund and how we've approached it.
Senator Dursten.
I really appreciate everything that you're telling, and I'm aware of much of it. I am concerned about the $2 million that's already been allowed to go out of that fund and another $500,000 this year, and I was wondering if you could address that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I totally missed that. Yes, and one of the reasons that the fund source developed a fairly significant balance in that process was obviously because of the proliferation of the use of cell phones. Over the course of the last 5 years, the number of people, and especially young people that are using cell phones now, the number of lines that are assessed that 15-cent fee has increased pretty dramatically. And as we've watched where that fund has gone, it was recommended and the legislature approved that transfer to the general fund during the general bill process, and that's how that occurred. Moving forward, we need to, I think, keep our eye on what's happening on the federal level and the impact that that could have on this fund source and the services that we may be required to pick up if those services are passed down to us. And again, we continually work with the deaf community in terms of what would be the best way to move forward. As with CapTel, that was a moving technology, and we moved forward with that fairly conservatively, making sure that's not going to have a big impact on the fund. But what we've seen there, and I didn't mention this earlier, is that the usage of CapTel has exceeded the use of our regular relay services now. So we know that that's a new technology that people want and are using more than our standard relay services.
Senator Merchant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So now, if all of the transfers go through, including the one that is making its way, that fund will have $400,000? Is that where we're at now? And $200,000 is designated for cochlear? I'm trying to run the numbers in my head as you have laid out the total amount and then the transfers that occurred earlier and then the one that proposed now. Where will that fund be at totally if all of these go through?
You're roughly in that area, about $500,000. And we work, I should state this too, we work very, very closely with your Appropriations Committee on this fund. They have a very detailed condition statement with all of the projected revenue, expenses, and commitments to the fund source. So that's detailed information that your Appropriations Committee already has. We could certainly provide that to you, but that's roughly in the range.
Thank you very much. Sure. I must say that this is deja vu all over again. In 2003, when I was Vice Chairman of Appropriations and this fund was growing rather rapidly, there was an interesting struggle of whether we should stop appropriating the money, and the argument was that as technology advanced, there would be a need for the fund, and so as a compromise, quite frankly, we end up reducing the size of the annual buildup in the fund. But the buildup in the fund isn't just for cochlear implants. $200,000 out of the fund is available in any one year under the present legislation, if I remember correctly. But it's an interesting issue, because at the time I was on the other side of the fence trying to get money, the time the fund, in fact, it probably still says for future development, and without being specific, right? Is that fund not tied to any specific application, if I may?
Right. It's for the telecommunications relay service. That's what the fund is dedicated for.
And as far as the federal government passing on, I had the good fortune to have a son who was FCC commissioner and pointed out to him the disaster would happen in big states like South Dakota with few people. And so far, but he's no longer, of course, a commissioner.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Are you ready for motion?
Yeah, I am. I think we've...
Move to pass.
One more question from Senator Merchant.
Move to pass.
Yes. Senator Merchant. Senator Merchant was first again, please.
I'll second
it. Okay. You made a motion. Do pass. Any further discussion on the motion? Yes, Senator Merchant.
Well, and I think this remains germane to this topic, but just it's not a question any longer because we're past that, I guess, but I'd like to see that when we have money being compiled in a fee, that it's exactly or as close we can have to what we're going to need. I think this is really enlightening to me that we're above and beyond of what was necessary, but yet we were conservative, and perhaps there was things coming that we weren't aware of, but now it's depleted. I'm very concerned about it, and I think that I would like to have more information on this and other fee structures that may be doing, overcharging our people, basically, and collecting money.
I think you'll hear about that from the Appropriations Committee. But Senator Justin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just briefly, and I wouldn't go on except that this is the only bill we have. And I paid a lot of money to come out here, so I want to get my money's worth. I think this is relevant. I found out about the transfers, $2 million already and another half scheduled, and we asked the appropriations to substitute another committee that had a lot of money, but they did appropriations. They decided not to. And I know how things work out here, but the people in the deaf community were very concerned that some of this fund was being taken for cochlear implants a year ago. But I think, it's a small amount of money, and I think it's appropriate, and I think this is the fund that you go to for that. So I am very much in favor of this bill.
Thank you very much. And just before my comment, I think it's an excellent idea to pass the bill, and I'll support it. And I won't take the time in the committee, but I've done a great deal of research for myself, even at the advanced age of almost 80, about cochlear implants. But that's another whole issue. We won't take the time on that now. Hearing no other discussion on all those in favor of a do pass will say aye, opposed nay, and the secretary call the roll.
Dempster.
Aye.
Gant. Gerstad.
Aye.
Merchant.
Aye.
Miles.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Adelstein.
Aye. Is there a motion for consent?
Is this eligible for consent? Is this appropriation?
Gant.
We won't worry about it. We'll take it to the floor. Is there a motion for adjournment?
I don't want to consent.
Do you want consent? Or is there a motion for consent? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Senator Merchant opposed. Very good. It will go to the floor. And Senator Merchant, would you pitch the bill on the floor?
I think Senator Hanson is the co-sponsor.
Oh, he is. Oh, I'm sorry.
Here.
I didn't look to see.
No.
Okay, good. Very good.
Hanson.
Take it to your... Senator Hanson, present on the floor.
Sponsor, you know, but I would expect, Senator Merchant, that you or whoever from the committee would help him through it. You know, maybe, you know...
Oh, it is Senator Hunstad.
I don't know why I said Hanson, but Senator Hunstad is...
I will visit with him,
Mr.
Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any help the committee members should give. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now, I think we've concluded our business. A motion to adjourn. Second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.